Rob Mara, DeJounte.
I had Scott and Eric, but I heard a female voice going at the same time that I did not get.
Carrie Gibbons.
Thank you.
Aaron, I think that was me, Josie.
Okay.
Michelle McDowell. Stephen Sachs.
Okay. Anyone else who has not signed in? Well, Bob, this is a huge turnout for your task
group. All right.
I bet you're excited. All right, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Great. So the main reason why I really wanted to bring this task back was I don't feel like we have a good handle on our predation at the dam, and I'm mainly just speaking for the Dalles. It's something we've been struggling with for a long time. We've been seeing the bird numbers climb, and we have very limited means to haze them and keep them away. And so it raises a lot of questions for me on whether or not we're actually achieving our goal, trying to keep predation down. So it's been a couple of years since this task was together, and I look back through the notes, and we just kind of left it hanging. Back in 2018, and I guess the assumption was that we were pointed in the right direction and we would actually have something better in place right now. Speaking for just the Dalles, we don't have anything better in place right now. And it's a problem that needs to be addressed, and that's why I wanted to get this group back together. So I assume most of you had some time to at least look back on the history on that POM website, just to try to figure out where we've been and what we're looking at doing here.
This is Chris. I actually didn't get a chance to look at the POM. I was going through the Appendix 11, looking at basically kind of what we're doing now for the program.
Okay, yeah, and that's part of it, too, and I was trying to figure out what, try to fine-tune what we want to do with this group, because it's a pretty broad subject, but the main thing is to make sure we have, Appendix L and FEP up to date. Is this where we are? And then mainly figure out what direction do we want to go with it. That makes sense. So the last I could find, looking on the FPOM website back in 2018, where we kind of left it off, I was at that time pushing to get something done with Miller Rocks. Now we went back and forth on it. As far as what could we possibly do, and from a core perspective, we can't do anything with Miller Island, Miller Rocks nesting colony. It's not in our jurisdiction, and nor do we own it, and we never did figure out who owns it. So at that time, then our focus was, all right, we need to take care of our problem at the dam. And at that time, the thought was we need to have lethal as a tool, which we do not have. Since that time, we've been spinning our wheels, and we still do not have the option to use lethal in Portland District as an abatement measure. And so we're still trying to get something to happen there, but we're not there yet. And I don't expect it to happen this next season either.
Well, I can give an update for the rest of the group who does not know where we are at, but we have had a kind of a change in mind of our legal department that now agrees with the Walla Walla District approach. And the next step for us to get lethal take is for our NEPA documents. And so I have I've been in contact with the folks who do our NEPA analysis, and they said that they need some sort of scope. So I was asking for trigger numbers from the dam so we could see what kind of scope we are talking about. And I am still waiting on John Day. And when I get John Day, then I can pass that in, and they can start on our NEPA analysis.
Aaron, can you give us a quick oversight of the time frame for the NEPA application and the process from start to finish and from the court's perspective?
I wish I could, Charlie, but no, I really don't know. I do know that they seem to be slow as molasses, but I thought getting the trigger number would not be that long either, and that's taken a long time, so I don't. But I'm hoping we can start working on this soon. And once that NEPA analysis is done, then I can start adding it into the contract for USDA.
So a question on the trigger numbers, is that? And I guess this is a question for the other agencies. Do you think we want to see a standard trigger number across all projects, or just leave each project up to their own to determine what that trigger number would be?
Hey, Bob, this is Nathan. I think that part of the reason we went with individual trigger numbers last time was that Yellow Dams have different areas. Bonneville has two tail races, right, and a spillway tail race, so it's just more area in general. And I think the argument that we have been trying to make by doing the monitoring at the dams is that we've seen an increase in numbers, right? Like, what's the trend over time? Regardless of what you consider a base level, are trigger numbers generally increasing? Are they staying the same? Are they decreasing? And once you at least have a few years of, you know, counts, right, you can start looking at those counts over time and sort of seeing what they do. And I think that will help justify a trigger and taking action. But the piece we ran into before, like just trying to collect goals for stomach samples, was that Fish and Wildlife Service told us all the take was already given out. They'd already given out all the take they would on the Columbia River for California goals, and it was all up in mid-sea dams. So we're out of luck. But there's a couple aspects, right? There's the internal politics of the Corps and trying to get approval to go forward. But you're going to also have to work with Fish and Wildlife Service on this one, just so that people know that. But the NEPA document, one thing, their permit, I assume, would be different than that. But it might be activity tied in there. I don't know.
This is a good time for me to jump in. And so it would be great, as the NEPA document is starting to be developed, that you tie us in. So the Fish and Wildlife Service decision to issue a permit needs NEPA too. And so if we can adhere to the Corps' NEPA, that makes everything so much easier and smoother. So please tie us in early. That's my request. And the second one is one of the things that we're going to need that comes with a depredation permit application is a form that comes from Wildlife Services that takes a look and really digs into the conflicts that you're having and comes up and helps develop that trigger number.
Okay.
Washington. How would that interplay with Washington's current status of the American white pelicans? Maybe not a question for here, but just a concern from Washington's viewpoint at this point in time. If they delisted, that'd take care of it, but at the current time, they're still under protection.
Yeah, and they're protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, too. We have issued permits for the take of American white pelicans in the past for other agencies. It would be something that we would need to coordinate with the state.
Okay.
So I assume that Portland District, in working through this this authorization to give us permission to do lethal, they have been in communication with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, or no, or not?
No,
I have not received a call.
Sorry, it hasn't gone to our NEPA people because they want a scope to work with that they can start on it. And
okay.
Until I can get that from all three dams, we haven't moved. So thank you for that. And I will definitely let our NEPA folks know that you would like to be looped in immediately, but I'm not quite there yet. I'm still needing stuff from our dams.
Okay. Well, and I do recommend that Wildlife Services take a look and do that form 37, to do that early, and that really will assist with your scope.
Form 37, could you send this to me?
I can send it to you.
That would be great.
I can send you a link. Remind, which voice am I hearing at the moment?
This is Erin Kovalchuk. I will send you an email afterwards so that you have my email address.
Awesome. Thanks, Erin.
Well, thanks for chiming in, Michelle. I think that's going to be really helpful to get our process continuing to move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the bigger question is I'm not hearing any objection to having Portland District use lethal as an abatement on gulls or cormorants. Is that a true statement? Because now is the time to speak up. Okay, I take that as approval.
Are you at this?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
This is Josie from NOAA. I don't think anyone else from our group is on this call, and I feel like that's a better question for our avian predation specialist, who is Lynn Krasnow, and I didn't really know what exactly this meeting was going to be about, so... You know, I wouldn't mind checking in with her before I say that we support this proposal, but she may be in the loop about it already.
Okay.
and this I think it's important that the folks who know and recognize the core, this is Nathan again from the core, that the reason that we hate purge and the reason that we're trying to keep away from the dam is to meet the survival metrics that were achieved, you know, when hazing was in play.
Yeah, definitely.
It's part of it. I think, and Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you talked about this before, that the use of lethal deterrence in conjunction with pyrotechnic hazing is a known tool in this toolbox of trying to prevent, whether it's crop loss or fish predation, or, you know, it's a method, it's a management tool to deal with birds.
Yes. So under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and that's going to be where that's my role, is to just help assist in letting folks know what the Migratory Bird Treaty Act says and how to go through the depredation permit regulations and making sure that the application comes in okay. Really, this ties back to a regulation that, and it ties back to damage. And so if the Corps can show that there is damage, then that's when a depredation permit can be applied for. And for us, we needed to analyze the bird populations and make sure that whatever we authorize to be taken, it's not going to hurt the conservation of that species. So that's the scoop. Keep me in the loop. The service's decision is going to be based on whether to issue a permit or not. And a lot of that comes down to making sure that the overall populations are okay.
Hey, Aaron, I've got a question for you about the NEPA process. And something that I haven't had to deal with very much. I think a lot of people on the operations side of the Corps that work on management issues work under existing biologic opinions that have already been issued and working to enforce those, so we're not used to going through the consultation process, really. But with this, is this a reconsultation of the main stem biop?
I just can't answer that. I don't know.
Hey, that makes two of us. I'm just trying to learn the process.
Me too. And by the time I am done with this, I will be able to answer your question. But I...
All right. The folks downtown will have a better sense of where this is supposed to plug in, I hope.
Okay. So I did throw together an agenda for this. I'm assuming you guys have looked at it or have it in front of you now, and it is more just a bunch of ideas I threw out there, trying to figure out a direction to go with this, and it's kind of a shotgun approach. As I mentioned before, one of the things we do need to update and excel, at least from my project on the Dalles, it needed quite a bit of work and rewrite, which I've turned in. And I assume the other projects also have not looked at it in quite a while, so they may need the same attention. One of the things that was on there that I noticed was kind of at the beginning of Appendix L's mention of a 2,000-foot boundary around the projects, which I'm not sure where that number came from, but I would think that we would want to make sure that that distance meets the boundary that was established when we did the biop juvenile survival evaluation. Is that not correct?
I guess I would agree with you. I think that it should be in the same metric that we were doing all of our tests on.
Yeah, and that was my thought too, and those lines don't match. So that may be something that just needs to be amended in Appendix L, just generally speaking.
How far off are they, Bob?
That I don't know.
So, Bob, are you talking about the first survival array below the project? So, you know, in a survival study, you're going to have an array that's potentially 1.3 kilometers below the project.
Right. So that's essentially our boundary where we're responsible for any predation up to that line, correct?
You used to be, because that was where the hydraulic influence line was written for the survival studies.
But yeah, like 2,000 foot butter, I don't know where it came from, but it's definitely not accurate.
Well, this is Chris. I mean, we can definitely talk to the bios and see if there's a better way of describing that. The description is approximately 2,000 feet, so we're talking a tail race. And obviously, you know, conditions at McNary is going to be different than lower granite just because of the size and scale.
Yeah, you have to remember all the survival studies were based on hydraulic influence of the dam. So they picked a point how far down below the dam where you had what operations of the dam didn't affect the hydraulics. That's why that was selected for the survival studies.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, I just ask that everybody look through their projects in Appendix L and do the updates, and then we can run that by next Fish Passage Plan update meeting. Another thing that I was thinking about is just the data collection that we're doing right now. There's a lot of effort done by many folks on establishing where we're at now. And then we reflect that in the status reports and in the annual reports. And if there's information that that regional managers need that is not in there, or if it needs to be done differently, that's something that you need to share with us and let us know.
And I had a question about this with data reporting requirements. I was asked to look at this in terms of the information we're collecting at the dams, and does that meet what's required in the biop? When you look in the biop, it's very vague. It just says you will monitor effectiveness of hazing. And so it's my question was there discussion at some point in the past about what's kind of the minimum requirement for reporting? Maybe that's topic 6.
I think there was. I don't know. Nathan, when you were, when FFU was involved with establishing the data collection, do you recall those discussions? You still on, Nathan? All right, maybe we'll have to come back to that.
Yeah, and maybe this is a question for Lynn.
Yeah, and Chris, this is Leah. It might also be a question for Sean Tackley. I know during negotiations and working on the proposed action and biop drafts, he was on point for that, for the Navy and predation pieces.
All right, I'll contact him, just see what he has to say.
Yeah. For your awareness, I don't recall there being any specific additional requests. And understand your comment on the vagueness.
Yeah. What do you have to say?
I was going to say, if you're going to talk to Sean, expect to have a meeting scheduled in. I believe there's an internal meeting that Sean is setting up to talk on some of these issues. Because after the draft buy-up was announced, the tribes kind of had some issues that there was no coordination. Out of that came that NOAA would take a look at this avian synthesis report and take a more close look at avian information once that report is out. So I think that's kind of part of the reason why there's some vagueness. I'm not going to make any other comments about the awesomeness of your biop and why there's vagueness on avian stuff. I think you know the tribe's position on where we need to be going on this
stuff.
I totally
take offense with that, Tom. I've wrote every word of that.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to write much. You didn't have to write much there. That's well done. I mean, I saw a paragraph in there. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think we're kind of in this like weird, like, there's more information. We're kind of waiting. It's a bit of a wait and see, but then we have this buy-up out there. So we've had the same discussion internally about how are we addressing this and what's the path forward. And a lot of people that wear very fancy shoes have not come up with very good answers yet.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, just in general, you look at the avian program, I'm using air quotes right here, and, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the work at the islands and the pit monitoring and all that, and then we have all this work that's at the dams, and they're not necessarily coordinated, shockingly enough.
No, and those were split. Gary Fredericks wanted those split apart because he thought that he wanted to make sure to get traction on, I guess, one or the other. So that's when they kind of divided the estuary from the inland work, and then he also wanted the project stuff split off from the more island-based, colony-based estimates of predation via pit recovery.
Well, I can see separating the implementation. I mean, that's obviously different groups and different funding, potentially funding sources in there. At some point, all this information should be coming together in some way so that we can evaluate, you know, how good a job we're doing.
Yeah, I agree. Oftentimes we have a big disconnect between what we're seeing out there and how we're managing things at the dams.
Well, Chris, you must have read our comments because I think we asked for exactly the same thing. We're actually trying to push some of the stuff through the council to maybe have the council set up a program to do just that, because right now we feel this is fairly disjointed and they're, I mean, as we saw, just like on Lethal Take, we had one district of the Corps doing one thing and the other district doing something completely different. And trying to get some uniformity would be delightful. How we get there is another very interesting question.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least we can start talking about it. And along those lines, you know, I would like to have a discussion about just, you know, things like we do at the dams, the counting, which is our kind of the basic way that we track what's going on at the project, and just in looking through Appendix L, the Walla Walla projects. I mean, most of how we do the counting is similar, but it's not the same, not always. And for example, some projects state that they'll do the counts twice a day. Some projects usually just do it once a day. It can't be at a set time. It can't be whenever they do their ladder inspections, which is kind of randomly, you know, throughout the day. projects differentiate foraging versus roosting birds, while other projects just don't. They just count birds. Those are the kind of things for the at the project that I would definitely like to try to more standardize, so that we, once we do have these bird counts, I mean, we have a better way of interpreting it.
Yeah, good point. And that's going to be direction from FPOM on what they want to see, right?
Or NOAA on BIOP, you know, requirements. I mean, I think they definitely have a say in this as well. I mean, the whole reason we're doing this is obviously trying to reduce predation at the projects, which are then measured at some level at the islands. And we spend a lot of effort and money. Denise can point to that. And in some cases, we're like throwing spaghetti at the wall, seeing, you know, what sticks with some of the methods we use, not knowing which ones are actually doing anything. You know, our sprinklers at Elk Falls effective at reducing pelicans? I'm thinking not.
Well, and there is something that occurs with integrated management, is that birds will get used to non-lethal methods. And so that's one of the reasons why there's oftentimes wildlife services will do a switch and keep changing things up. And then having some lethal reinforcement really can make a difference. So you were asking about reporting requirements. Aaron, I'm going to send along a depredation permit application as well, a link. And there are some questions that if there is some data behind it, it's easier to respond to a full depredation permit application if there's data.
Great. Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, I will definitely be letting Lynn know about this conversation going on, and I can get back to Bob and Erin with anything she has to report, and you too, Chris.
Thank you.
And I think I may have missed a couple of emails. I'm not sure where to go to find Appendix L. And can you quickly run through, Bob, your big list of three or four species, just so I can wrap my head around it, bird species that you're concerned with?
Well, for the Dells, it's primarily California gulls. That's our largest number that we get. And those are mainly coming from Miller Rocks, which is halfway between Dells and John Day, which you may be familiar with. Cormorants, they never really were a big issue in the past. They just kind of roosted on the towers in the Fore Bay, and then they dispersed during the day, and we wouldn't see them around the project or near project a lot. That dynamic's definitely changing. And we don't really have good information on what they're consuming, aside from just what observations we're making. And then once in a while we'll see what they have when they come up, if we're close enough, but more often not. And then the new players are the pelicans, which seem to be expanding rapidly, and we're seeing more every year.
So
don't really know what they're feeding on.
We have no idea. Well, we have an idea what they're feeding on. Just through observation, we have confirmation of adult shad. But we don't know. We don't have a real good handle on how many juvenile salmon they're taking.
They've also recovered some on the pit package from Badger Island, right? There's been a little bit of information on.
Yes, Tom, I was going to say, we actually contacted RTR to do an evaluation on, like, say, fall Chinook, and pelicans were found to be a fairly active predator for them. I think the question with pelicans is, we know they eat salmon in certain locations, and we know they at this time of year in other locations they eat more shad. I would say there's a big question temporally and locationally what they're doing, and that's kind of the big question mark, like if at the Dalles they're mostly eating shad and scaring off gulls, they can be beneficial. If at McNary, right, they're almost all eating, they're eating nothing but fall Chinook, that's going to be a different problem. So that's the kind of information I think we're looking for, and we've actually suggested and advocated in that since this report that we referenced to get as much pelican information as we possibly can out of there. I don't know where our comments are on that report.
Thanks,
Tom. I'm assuming some of the other core folks have also looked into this or are going to make similar comments.
And Michelle, Appendix L is in the Fish Passage Plan. It's the last appendix in there.
All right. Can somebody just send a link to me? I don't know where to go. Sorry.
No, we'll do. When I send you an email, I'll send you the link to the FPP, the Fish Passage Plan.
Thank you. Okay, and so California gulls, double-crested cormorants, American white pelicans, ring-tailed gulls aren't on your guys' radar? It's really California?
Both over at the Dalles, there are some, but it's primarily California.
And at McNary, we have both on our radar. Okay. Cormorants, we also have terns, and we monitor grebes in the forebay.
Grebes.
Thank you. And Tom, I agree with you. There's definitely timing and place that is going to be key.
Michelle, maybe you can answer a question I've had. When Wildlife Services does the lethal take, they only do gulls and cormorants. And is that a permit restriction, or is that just been decided at some point that that's the most effective way to do it, or is there some other reason behind it?
That's what's on their permit.
Okay.
That's what was applied for. That's what we have NEPA documentation on. And Wildlife Services might, oftentimes they'll have NEPA needs as well. And so that's another reason to pull them in. I'm thinking about some of the bigger NEPA documents, like the double-crested cormorant management plan for East Sand Island. Wildlife Services was at the table early on, too.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, so... So we've covered the problem species, and we discussed some about the population changes that we're seeing recently. Something occurred to me about the biop and our juvenile survival goals that we met going on 10 years ago now, quite so close to the Dalles anyway. Just kind of a general question on those biop targets. Was there an expiration date on once we meet it? Because the predator base has certainly seemed to change quite a bit since that. And I know folks cringe when I ask that question, but are we meeting BIOP now? And I know nobody can answer it, but have folks been asking that question? Because most of the things we have done to meet BIOP have been determined because of predation within that given zone downstream and down.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, go ahead, Bob.
All I was going to say is that we've asked some of the comments, but with this new BIOP being a no jeopardy based on your baseline, it's muddled because we've kind of, the new BIOP has moved away from performance standard testing, but they assume the benefits of performance standard testing are still there under the baseline case. So whatever survival benefits we had or whatever it was in the base case, we assume those are going to go forward and are going to continue, but we're not measuring them. So it, as you may notice, this is of kind of a squishy jello-like object we're playing with right now, and I'm hoping that it's going to start to solidify and firm up. I know Portland Division is looking at what are we committed to, what do we need to keep doing, and that. And I think Sean Tackley is trying to set up a meeting specifically dealing with, I think, avian predation, so I would look to him to hopefully get some guidance. But you're absolutely putting the nail in the right spot, going like, what is our plan forward? What have we done? What do we need to keep doing? And have we met our goals? And what do we need to do about it now? And I look forward to hopefully they'll give you an answer because they're still kind of ignoring me. But that's, I'm used to that. It's like talking to my teenagers. So.
Okay. I just wanted to throw that out there for thought, and hopefully somebody is. Higher up has given some thought to it. All right, hazing options.
Hold on. Scott, what was your comment? Because you let Tom go. What was your comment?
Tom covered it all. Amazingly, he covered everything I was thinking.
I don't know if I should be happy or scared by that, Scott, that we're both in sycophantic on this.
I'm a little scared, so be clear.
Okay, so the next thing was saving options, and we kind of have talked over some of that already, but what we're using at the Dalles, and every other project is basically using those too, is avian lines and hazers. And our hazers can only shoot pyros, and then upriver in Walla Walla, they can pull out the shotguns if they need to reinforce. We're trying to, given the present situation where we seem to be running out of options, one of the things coming in the
community. Is somebody running a blender?
Whoa!
Somebody taking a shower?
Yeah.
Espresso machine.
All right. So one of the new things that we have been trying is the laser, a handheld laser. It seems to be showing some promise. Just for birds that are sitting on the rocks. It's not effective for birds in the air that are foraging, but at least we can keep them from loafing around the project. And it only works under low light conditions, so it has a lot of limitations to it. But it is a new option that we're able to use, and it sounds like McNary is having some success with their system as well. So we are looking into what other options we can use. And if anybody has any grand ideas, we are all ears. Because, like I say, we've kind of run out of options.
Well, I
think
Bob, is
Denise...
Terry still looking at sound?
Who? Denise, when you talk about the light, the LiDAR?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the LORAD?
LORAD, that's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Okay. So they did do a LORAD test, and I just saw an email yesterday, the day before, from Bobby. They're asking for another one. I can't remember. There was reasoning behind why they didn't get the results that they wanted. I don't remember. I think the first one... If I remember right, the first one had to do with, like, the idea was they were trying to test how far the sound would carry and whether or not it would affect the nav lock, the parks, because we have the parks, the Spillway Park, which is, of course, right by the JFF. So they were trying to... The idea was they were going to station people at different areas of the park to get a personal... idea and each person response of how loud it was. And I remember I asked Bobby about, you know, since this was the main concern, did we discover that? And Bobby's comment back to me was it wasn't as loud as they expected it to be. So I know that they're moving forward, or they're trying to move forward with another test on it.
Can you briefly describe what LORAD is?
Oh my goodness, yeah, sure, put me on the spot. It's basically...
It's a loudspeaker. It's a straight-up loudspeaker.
Right.
It's a focused sound.
Yeah, it's an ultrasound. It is just basically a speaker system, and from... Martin Amon is our key person on that. He was the one setting up the testing, and he sent out diagrams and like coverage areas and what the decimal reading is supposed to be at each position throughout the project. And like I said, they were really expecting it to be extremely high at like Spillway Park and such, and I guess the reverberation and the bouncing off the water and also the spillway noise activity did make a difference, because it's, like I said, Bobby said it wasn't as loud as he expected it to be.
Okay. So it's ultrasound, too?
Is that Michelle? Sorry.
Yeah.
I can send you the information if you'd like on it.
Awesome. It sounds like an interesting new tool.
Who is doing the testing? Is this the Corps who's doing the testing, or is this part of USDA's arsenal, or who's doing the testing?
No, it's totally the Corps. Our engineer, Martin Amon, is the one that's running it. He's setting it up with the company that actually owns the LORAD. So specifically...
I just want to know if he's buying stock, because if he's buying stock, then I'm buying stock, because that means it's going to work.
And as far as I just wanted to mention, as far as the laser goes, we have had, just so you know, we have had some success with the lasers. As far as they go, light conditions do make a huge difference. The cormorants and the gulls both seem to be affected by it, or seem to be dissuaded by it. It actually does cause the numbers to dissipate. I know this. We had one at the outfall and one on the nav lock, and the nav lock actually shines on the outfall, and the outfall actually shines to the side of the outfall, and so there's different areas. And once we actually took those down or winterized them, the numbers of birds just increased. You could really see them. As far as roosting goes on the outfall pipe, there was like a line where they would, where they knew that the laser was, and they wouldn't roost anywhere inside of that laser area. So it did make a difference. And again, light conditions make a huge difference. The days that it was really bright outside, you know, it wouldn't affect them as much. the downfall, or the thing that I have found is a downfall, of course, they are expensive. And I have since discovered, and this was my comment to Bobby, is the laser light itself, which is replaceable, so the bulbs themselves are replaceable, they have a very short lifespan. Within a year, those bulbs need to be changed. So they tend to decrease as far as durability. So just an input.
How expensive are those bulbs?
Well, here's the problem, Chris, with that. So when I went to go order bulbs, the company that actually makes the laser, when I wrote to them to ask them about a bulb, they said they no longer make that style of laser, so they were not able to provide us with a bulb, a replacement.
Of course.
Oh. It was outdated. These were only a year old. Keep that in mind.
Well, and there is some literature out there that lasers can cause damage to bird's eyes, too. So just something to keep in mind. And I know that, just something to keep in mind.
Well, when we use them at the dowels with just the handheld laser, they need to actually, we don't try to shine it in the bird's eyes. They need to see that dot on some kind of substrate, like the rock they're sitting on or whatever, and yep. That's what confuses them.
Right. Which is why it's effective on the outfall bypass, because it actually shines on the outfall.
Okay. I think we've already talked about the desire to have the use of lethal for abatement at least for the dowels. and it probably would help to make sure that as we're working through the approvals on that, to make sure that we have all the agencies' endorsement. And that's why I was asking earlier if there's anybody that opposes to moving forward with lethal, now's the time to speak up. Endorsement by everybody would definitely be helpful.
Well, I can't endorse. What we do is we respond to an application. And I think most folks would say that we've worked well with the Corps in the past.
Okay.
And we don't have a representative from Bonneville here today, but in my discussions with Ben, Ben wants to leave his trigger very high so that they don't even get that many gulls there. But he's actually not interested in having lethal take at Bonneville just because of the high visibility of their project. And, you know, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
And, Aaron, I if we start seeing a problem, we can readjust and "quote unquote," use our favorite term, adaptive manage, as need be. But yeah,
right.
Chuck in enough, Bob. You'll have our endorsement if you want. We can sign it on a fancy letterhead, put it on a. We can skywrite it for you. Yeah, we've got options.
Yeah, I think one of the advantages Bonneville has is that because the tail races are all divided, they're not as big. They don't have these really massive tail race areas like you see at John Day or even the Dalles. So that the line coverage can be tighter right below the powerhouse areas, and that the hazers, they still seem to be more effective here. They really move the birds around when they come by. So every place is unique, I guess.
Okay, the last thing I threw on the agenda was just kind of a basic question, who manages migratory bird populations? And by that, I mean, when you have a known problem population, we need to get, in my understanding of how the system works, we need approval needs to be obtained from U.S. Fish and Wildlife. But who, I guess what I'm asking is, who actually is responsible for taking action on a if a population is getting out of control?
I think that question is aimed towards me.
I guess so.
And so what the service does is we authorize take. And that's our role. And we can, and sometimes there are regulations that are developed, and we redo NEPA analyses to make sure that we're using the best information. I'm going to point to the expanded double-crested cormorant EIS and proposed rule. They're in OMB review now. So with that, there's, if it's published, and I'm expecting that it will be soon, there's a new permit type that's available to states and tribes for double-crested cormorants. And it can be used for protection of T&E species, or it can be used for wild and managed stocks. So it's states, it's tribes, it's personal, it's farmers, and it's the people that have the conflict.
Okay, that makes sense.
Hey, Michelle, maybe...
go ahead.
Sorry, Bob. I think the other piece of this that I think is an important aspect of Fish and Wildlife's involvement is that they look at the biggest picture, right? They're trying to determine, of this species you might potentially impact, how is that population doing? What are the numbers like? Are they trending up or down? If we've already given out 100 take permits, what is that in proportion to the population? How much does, you know, how fast these birds reproduce? And at what point do we give out so many permits that we're going to have a negative impact on the larger population?
You got
it.
Kind of watching the biggest picture. Right. And that's the type of analysis that we need to have in NEPA documents. Whether we tie here to a core document or whether we have to develop it on our own. That's the type of analysis that we look at for each depredation permit. We tie it back to a bigger population and assess the level of impact.
Michelle DeShale, Charlotte Porter, Washington. Were you engaged at all with NOAA and the BIOP and the consultation in terms of NOAA's concern for avian predation and its impact on both?
Lynn and I chat quite a bit. Level of BIOP participation. I was more involved on the Fish and Wildlife Coordination Act report side. Looking at the service's role in drafting that report. What can I say? NOAA's in charge of the Salmonid, and our role is to implement the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Okay. Well, that is a little bit of help in understanding that relationship. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. Okay, well, I guess that's all I had for the agenda. Does anybody else have anything else to add?
Well, I may have misspoke. Did I say that Noah is in charge of fish, or did I say he and he listed some on it? Because it's a little confusing too. So even with T&E Salmonid, bull trout is in Fish and Wildlife Service's realm. And our fisheries folks, there are hatcheries.
So Fish and Wildlife Service is freshwater fish, resident fish, and NOAA fisheries are primarily the ocean. Fish.
You got
it. Salmon's counted as the ocean. That's why lamprey is a Fish and Wildlife Service species, because it spends most of its life in freshwater.
Yep. Thank you. Yep.
I think the better dividing line is it an ag product or not? Is there a commercial harvest of the fish?
Like shad?
Not enough.
Noah's in the Department of Commerce.
Yep.
All right. Well, I guess that concludes this meeting.
Well, Bob, I guess what's your takeaway from this? Where do we go from? Where do you want to go from? Where do you want to see this group go from here?
Good question, Charlie. I was afraid that would come up because I really don't know.
sorry about that.
So, Bob, the things I got written down is we want to check on reporting requirements and discussions internally, at least, with... for me, it's talking to Sean about what biop requirements may be in development regarding the avian work. We want to update Appendix L, check on the 2,000-foot guideline and see if that can or should be adjusted for projects. And then I would like to start the discussion on the bird counting methods and where each project is and how we might standardize that, or at least improve the effectiveness.
I also thought we had some takeaway on the additional forms that Michelle was going to provide as part of a take permit, as well as the need for the members back to Aaron, and better coordination between those doing the proposed to do the NEPA analysis and those involved with the actual work with the birds.
Okay.
Anybody else?
All right, must be lunchtime.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you all for calling in. Appreciate it.
Ms. Michelle, one more question. So we have I have a scheduled meeting, our permits office does, with Wildlife Services next week. Are there any concerns if I just do a very brief, this is what I heard on this call, this might be coming your way?
I don't think so.
That might be a good idea, actually, because that might help alleviate my concern. But kind of what we ran into last time was the sense that they had given out all the lethal take they were giving out. They weren't giving out anymore. They'd hit the ceiling.
You bring up a good point, Michelle, because I think Chris, you're still engaged with APHIS on your contracts for saving for next season.
We're still right in the middle of getting that all approved and funded.
Okay. Maybe there's some tie-in and looping in there in terms of this work and how we address those concerns, because being able to get stomach contents from some of those bird populations when they're abundant at times when both when salmonids are present and when they're not present is can be informative information. And yet there are restrictions on at what level of abundance they have to be at before you can legally remove them.
Yeah, we don't seem to have a problem hitting those triggers. So.
Yeah. Well, and it'll be good to take a look at what Wildlife Services has for their. I think Kevin Christensen was working on updating their NEPA. Each state has a list of how many birds they plan to take on a yearly basis, and it lists the species. So that's part of tying all the agencies together. Thank you.
Good. Yep. All right, I'm off. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, thanks, everyone.